The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Alistair Coburn. You're listening to Agile Uprising Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I'm your host today, Troy Lightfoot, and with me I have back William Stridham. Hello, William.
Hi, Troy. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, no problem. So William's been on a couple podcasts, one about Spiral Dynamics. If you aren't familiar with that one, please go back a couple months and check out our Spiral Dynamics podcast we did. And there was also one about the Cantor 4-player model about team dynamics and dialogue. So excellent podcasts. Gotten a lot of good reviews about those, and people, I get people asking for me for materials for both of those things quite a bit. So recommend those two episodes. So thanks, William, for coming back a third time. And today we're going to be talking about something called integral theory. And integral theory, William, I'm going to let you kick it off as to, you know, before we even get into what it is, why should anyone really care about this episode? Why should they keep listening?
Yeah. Thank you for that, Troy. Yes, integral theory and agile. Why I think it's important to use integral theory with agile is it allows you to look at things from multiple angles, not just one or two-sided. It's different viewpoints, different levels, different lines. These things will all make sense, hopefully, in a couple of minutes after I've explained what the integral theory model really is. And it helps you with agile transformations, be it at enterprise level or just making a team become more agile, or even the people on the team. It's like a model that you can use at different altitudes within your agile work that you're doing.
All right, cool. So what is it?
So integral theory was created by Ken Wilber. He's an American philosopher. And this model is like when it was introduced to me by the Agile Coaching Institute, they talked about the model of all models. And it's actually made up of five elements. We're talking about there'll be quadrants, there'll be levels, there'll be lines, there'll be states, and there'll be types.
Okay.
So the quadrants, in essence, is like if like any four areas of the quadrants, let me orientate you to it first, is if you draw the two lines on a piece of paper, and you'll say the top side is individual, the bottom side is group. You go, the left side is interior and the right side is exterior. Then what you end up with is on the upper left-hand side is interior individual. And so Ken called that the I quadrant. That's things where you look at the self or your own consciousness or something that's internal to you or the entity that you look at. And if you go to the top right-hand quadrant, he called that the it quadrant. And that's all about individual exterior. So it's the behavior, be it the behavior of, if you're looking at a person, that person's behavior, or if you're looking at a team, the team's behavior. Then the bottom right-hand quadrant, he called the its. So now we're talking exterior group. So there's multiples there. So that's where we talk about social systems or what's making up an organization's structure or how it's organized. You know, org charts lives there.
And then right.
The bottom left-hand quadrant is interior groups, and you call that the we quadrant. And that's all about mm-hmm. culture or values or morals. So it's kind of like norms between groups of people that will live in that quadrant. So,
gotcha.
So that's the four quadrant model that's built into the integral theory. Now, within this is what we call levels, which is actually altitudes of consciousness. If people listen to the podcast about spiral dynamics, it explains all these levels in greater details. So Ken took the spiral dynamics model and built it into the integral theory model. He did mm-hmm. change some of the colors, but it's still a value system that he built into this model. So I'm not going to talk too much about that. I'm going to say, go listen to that podcast, and then you'll understand the levels way better.
Right.
And then within each quadrant, going through the altitudes of consciousness, you'll get lines of development. And in each quadrant, you'll have different lines. Like in the I quadrant, you'll have like how your self is growing or how you are maturing. It might be emotional, relationship, all those kind of lines that will happen there. You'll also have in the IT quadrant, it might be practices and organizations. So it might be process-centric or goal-centric or customer-centric.
Right.
The same lines can be pulled through the IT quadrant where we're talking is, and they talk here about pre-modernism, modern, post-modern. There's various lines that you can draw there. And even on the cultural side, that's where you'll talk about, are people conformist, achievers, pluralistic, etc. There's the fourth one he called states, which are states of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And these states are like, and it's temporary in nature. It's kind of like at the moment, I might be mindful. Next moment, all of a sudden, you know, I'm dumped into chaos and it feels like all hell is broken loose. Or right. Then you go back to a state of flow or hyper-productivity. You never stay in those states for a long time, but you move in and out of them.
Okay.
And the last one he talked about is types. And yeah, we talk about like Myers-Briggs, or if people are introverted or extroverted, masculinity and femininity, disc profiles, things like that. So that's kind of like a type. It's just something right. that you can be classified by.
Okay.
And that's what makes up integral theory. It's like all these intersections of these things. So it's not something that you really get to like grasp in like 5 or 10 minutes, but it's something that as you get more comfortable with the intricacies of the levels, the lines, the states, and the types, and how they interplay in each of the quadrants, you can apply it to various areas. Now, there is a big movement called the Integral Theory Movement. We'll be putting up a link to their website called Integral Life. And I'll also put a more specific link on for how Integral can be used in Agile. By a big friend of mine, Johannes Charteau, who lives out in Germany. He created the website, and it's really helpful for using it in an agile setting.
Mm. Okay. Well, that's a really good introduction and explanation, and I think maybe if we get into the practicality of it now, it might hopefully make sense for some folks.
Yeah.
So, let's maybe give some examples of before. How about this? Before we get into Agile, right? Let's just get into how it can be used for practical applications in regular life, and then we can tie it back. So, let's take a political problem. And I know we try not to talk about politics on this podcast, so we're actually not going to talk about politics. We're just going to talk about a specific situation and how you might approach it using integral theory. So let's say that someone is poor. Okay.
Yep.
So normally, politically, particularly in the U.S., you have different viewpoints about how to handle that problem, right? So you may have some folks who say, well, if someone's poor, it's because they haven't done enough for themselves, right? And they need to kind of pick themselves up by the bootstraps and work harder and they'll be successful, right? I'm sure you've heard that before. And then you might have other folks who say, well, the only reason this person's poor is because they just haven't had any opportunity, and that opportunity has been systematically presented. The system has prevented them from getting the opportunities, right? So we need to pass laws to be able to make this person up poor. Now, whether that's some kind of universal income, whether that's a welfare, whether that's government jobs, whatever. But basically, that's an alternate viewpoint. So you have two different opinions about how to handle a certain problem. And they never, I don't think I've ever seen them agree about how to handle that problem. And if you look at integral theory, you can kind of see why, because the top left quadrant, which is the I, what they call the I me my quadrant, is basically all about internal self and internal willpower, self-confidence, self-reliance, these types of things. So consciousness. So if you think about it, that the first viewpoint lives in that quadrant. So people who only think that that is the solution for a problem are basically living in one quadrant of the integral model, right?
Yeah.
And people who only think that the solution is a systemic problem are also living in one quadrant. So both people who have opposing viewpoints, who both want to solve the problem, one, they can't agree, so it makes for pretty poor governing, right? Yeah. And two, as Ken Wilber has talked about in his books, and it makes sense to me, without a holistic view, integral theory kind of gives you a holistic view, viewing all the different options and all the different perspectives of a problem. So yes, maybe it is a systemic problem. Maybe there are some laws or some help that needs to be passed, you know, by the government. Maybe we need to help with, maybe there is a certain sense of self-confidence or will or knowledge, things like that, which would leave it in that top lip. What about, there might be cultural problems, right? So maybe the community that person lives in is not beneficial to them becoming successful. So that kind of lives in that bottom left quadrant. That's the culture internal, you know?
Yeah, and the weak quadrant, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so there's, and then maybe the top right quadrant is things like maybe there's even external things that can be measured, like grades, you know, how the person's performing in school. So the bottom right quadrant would be the school system, right? The top right quadrant would be their individual performance in school. And let's say even nutrition might live there for that person. There could be a lot of different things that could be affecting a certain situation, right? Or maybe aside from nutrition, maybe it's some kind of illness or whatever, right? But there could be a lot of things. So without taking a view of what an all quadrant kind of view, it's really hard to actually solve the problem. And you see why we have this bickering and poor governing in the United States. Now, I said I wasn't going to get political, but I'm not really being political. I'm just trying to be honest about what, I mean, I would think anyone listening to this would agree that the way that this country is currently governing is not that effective. Meaning different viewpoints can never agree on anything and they don't compromise. And that's what happens when you live in, like when you only live in one quadrant. So I wanted to get your opinion on what you thought about that one.
Yeah, that's part of way Caden said, people normally look from one viewpoint, maybe two. And what he's saying is not only are there more viewpoints because there's four quadrants, you've got to look at it from all four of the quadrants, just like you were talking. But also look at it from different levels. You can do a top-down view with it. You can do a bottom-up view at it through the levels. You can do what's some of the lines in each of the quadrants you can look at. So all of a sudden, you're getting way closer to a holistic view of what's going on. And instead of having one or two things that you've got to, that you can address, you might get a whole slew of things. Because it doesn't matter what issue or problem or even potential advantage we're looking at, there's always more than one thing you can do to either move things forward, resolve things, or fix something that's broken. There's multiple things that you've got to do. The more things that, and sometimes it's a lot of small things that actually make the change versus one big thing that's wrong.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense to me. At least. Okay. So now that we talked about politics for a second, let's get into enterprise agile transformation. So what have you seen when it comes to integral theory? What do you have experience with? What have you seen as any case studies, anything you've tried, any opinions at all about this?
Yeah, so I've been fortunate enough to go through when the Agile Coaching Institute was actually delivering the Integral Agile Bootcamp. I was part of the first group of people that went through that. Mm-hmm. And so from that, not only did we learn about integral theory, but it's kind of like, how do we bring that back to help that enterprise transformations that everybody loves to talk about and do? And sometimes it's just an adoption that we're doing, but still it's helpful in that regard. Because for me, personally, I use it twofold. I use it for initially an assessment. And then secondly, how am I going to go about actually doing that transformation or adoption that they're doing? How can I make it the most successful by using this model? And the crux for it, for me, lies in most people concentrate on the external sides, which will be the it and its quadrants. Most because those are the things that's the easiest to observe, to measure, and to see what's going on there. The left side, which we call the I and the we quadrants, not a lot of people are even paying attention to it or making that part of what they're doing, the work that we are doing at the organizations. So for me, it doesn't matter when I'm coming in to assess, let's say, an organization, how I like to set up the quadrants for me is I go in the top left-hand side, the I quadrant, I'm going to put leadership there. Because whatever leadership allows is what's going to happen at that organization. Gotcha. Then on the top right-hand, the it quadrants, I'll put practices. What are the teams, the supporting teams, how do they go about doing what they're doing in the organization? Be it sales, marketing, software development, operations, whatever areas they've got. Then the bottom right-hand quadrant, the its quadrant, for me, that's normally the organizational design. How are they structured? An organization will perform to how they're structured. If they're hierarchical, they're probably going to hit some ceilings at some point. Or even worse, if they've got one person who's trying to lead them and tell them exactly what to do every step of the way, are they more of a holacracy or are they flex works? All those things will come into play in that quadrant.
Right.
Then the bottom left-hand side is the organizational culture in the we quadrant. What are the norms and the unspoken values that these people are living out in the organization? That will all come up. So I look at all four of those areas: leadership, practices, organizational design, organizational culture. So
okay.
Part of it for me, especially initially in the assessment of them, is, you've got to do various methods here. You want to do observation, you want to do interviews, you want to do surveys, you want to go look at artifacts. But look at it from all these different viewpoints. for me at the leadership level, once again, I want to gauge where are these leadership, especially in the altitude of consciousness. Okay. Some people, it depends on how open they are. If people want to do the leadership circle tool, I go for that because that's probably one that will really, I will get data to show them what's happening in the I quadrant there.
For those who aren't familiar with the leadership circle, without going too much into it, where can they find out more about that?
The leadership circle, I think, no, you put me on the spot. Let me look it up because I am not sure what their website is called these days. I just Google it.
Well, there's a book, right? They have
Mastering Leadership by Bob Anderson and Bill Adams.
So maybe there's a book we can link for the Leadership Circle called Mastering Leadership, right?
Yeah. And it's just leadershipcircle.com is their website, but we can add that as well.
Okay, will do. Okay, sorry, continue. You were going to practices.
Yeah, and in practices, normally there you go look at, are these people, are they just, you know, doing the skunk works? Are they doing more XP practices? Are they following some frameworks, and it might be a waterfall framework, who knows, or a waterfall methodology. What are they doing? Are they trying Scrum? Some people are already, you know, doing a blend of like Scrum and XP and Kanban. What's their maturity in it? All those things you look at in the practices side. On the organizational design side, I will look for what artifacts do they have about how they are organized. Sometimes there you might get, if this organization are a little bit more mature in their agile adoption, you might find people here that's already used some elements of LESS where they've solved pain points for them, or they've adopted SAFe, they DAD, you know, Scrum at Scale. I think that's one of the later models. Which ones are you seeing? And are they doing it? Are they trying to do it? Have they tried and failed? You know, if they failed, what did they learn from it? All those kind of things.
Right.
On the cultural side, you want to go look at how are the people behaving as a group in the organization, not as individuals. So you're trying to look for trends here. Are people double booking meetings? Or are people to the point where they go, we have meetings only in the mornings or late in the afternoon, so we've got blocks of time where we work and we don't do task switching, things like that. Do they work where they get individual recognition, or do they work in a way where they are all more of a communion? Let's find out what everybody thinks about this. Let's take the problem to, you know, the guy sitting next to me, the guy across the hall. Let's all talk about it. Things like that. So for me, it's kind of like once I've got that full, it's almost like a 360 view of the organization.
Right.
I now know, because we talk about you've got to meet them where they're at.
Right.
Because if I walk into an organization that's very conformist and I tell them, well, you guys have got to be very pluralistic and, you know, we've got to listen to everybody, they're just going to go, can you please tell me what to do? Because that's right. Where they at. So and that's where you want to meet them. That's where you want to go. That's where you go, yes, the Scrum guide, let's talk about these things. And then you want to be half a step or a step ahead of them. How do you get them to say, that's not just a ceremony or an event. Here's the meaning behind it. Here's why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And so how can we grow them? And then I look at things to do in all four the quadrants there. You want to get them, if they are new to Scrum, say as an example, you want to introduce to them, here's the Scrum guide. Let's get you trained up on it. Let's get you to actually try it out. On the organizational design, you need to go look, can you even form a cross-functional team? Or are the organizations so siloed that you've got to work through a matrix system to get them to become to the point where they might, where you can actually put a team together that's got like all the skill sets needed on it? Mm-hmm. In the I quadrant, you probably want to work with the leadership and you want to get them ahead of the teams because they are going to hold the space for Agile to emerge. And if they're not there yet, you need to grow them. what are the various methods that they even open to? Some people are open to coaching. Other people, you can do some training and you can try and do touch points where you want to see if you can change their habits over time. Then you've got to see how does that influence over in the organizational culture. That's where the spiral dynamics come in. Use that model, see how you can move that culture. You've got to do some communication, change modeling. All those things have got to happen there. So you've got to address something in each of the quadrants if you want to move the organization up even half a level to get right. them closer to for the agile adoption to work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So at the team level, maybe we can talk about that for a second. So you've been talking about organizational levels. So at the team level, you can use this for identifying, obviously, team culture that lives in that bottom left corner, right? That right. bottom left quadrant.
Yeah, team values and norms. Yeah.
Right. Yep. So are they working in silos as and they just a group of people, or are they working as an actual team? Right. So are they pairing? Are they mobbing? Do they live up to their working agreements? Things like that, right? Do they care about any of those things? And then that top left quadrant, you can look at things like motivation, happiness. There are some tools, for instance, some basic things like Jürgen Apello's moving motivators is an example. You can use something like a happiness door if you have co-located teams, or you can use some, there's some online tools which you can use for tracking these things. Maybe I'll link one of them in the show notes.
Yeah, some of them works on emoticons. Yeah, very cool. Yeah.
And then things like skill sets. So what are the skill sets on the team, and what are the knowledge silos that exist on that team, right, for the individuals? And where are they at, and in what levels are they at in those skills, right? So you can use this to formulate like what's lacking on the individual kind of knowledge on the team. And then you can use and work on the team culture to grow out the skill sets. And hopefully you get more cohesive teams, and that might lead to individual motivation and happiness. And the thing about integral theory is that what's amazing is if you move one thing in one of the quadrants, you can kind of see how it moves something in the other, or vice versa, for the negative or for the positive, you know?
Yeah, so, I agree. Yeah. Of course, it goes around what to amplify or what to dampen.
Right.
And it is interlinked, but if you leave one quadrant or one side out, it will create a gap that can't be transcended.
Yep. And for example, that bottom right quadrant, which is the more environmental or systemic view, that can have a big impact on all three of the other quadrants. So what happens in that, right? So if there's an org change, if leadership is behaving in a certain way for positive or negative, it can have a huge impact on the other three quadrants, you know? So that's something to look out for. So I can give you an example. So we used this, myself and an RTE at the last client we were at, we used this to figure out, you know, possible metrics for a program, right? And we used the four quadrant model from integral theory, and we used levels and lines for the metrics. So things like happiness and motivation and skill sets and those types of things at the program level. And then we actually came up with some plans about how to measure those. So those are kind of leading indicators to other things. So this place, they measured ENPS, which is like an employee net promoter score, which basically showed how willing the employees would be to recommend this company to work at, right? So what would happen is sometimes leadership would get these ENPS scores and they would see them, and let's say they weren't stellar, then there would be discussion about what to do. But that is a lagging indicator. So we were trying to measure things which would be leading indicators to higher ENPS. So that's an example of what we would do in the that top left corner. And also the bottom left corner, which is the team culture or the program culture. So we really focused on things like team dynamics, We use some of the cancer model stuff there. Pairing and mobbing was a big one. And then we looked at things like commitment and accountability, and we actually figured out how to measure some of that stuff. And that was really the measuring the culture. The top right was your practices, basically, the team level practices and how are we doing in those practices, technical practices. And then the bottom right was pretty interesting because we had some systemic views of like mean time to recovery for environments. Let's see. What was another one we did? There was one where we were trying. They didn't start it when I left, but I'm hoping they're going to start it, you know, in the near future. And it's like the amount of time it takes when something is escalated for it to be resolved from leadership. It's mean time to resolution, right? For blockers at a program level, and that's more like, well, if that's not improving, then. And a conversation needs to happen as to why that is. And maybe there's an organizational design issue or something like that, right? So we really took a four quadrant approach to the program level metrics. So that's an example of using Integral 3 for even metrics.
Yeah, that's a great example that you were using there. And this helps you, especially as being a coach, and you don't want to drive them to the answers. What you want to do is, you want to say, here's a different way to think about this and what's coming up for you. What does that unlock for you?
Right. Yeah, totally agree. So I can give a personal example. So, and the idea is that this thing is like the theory of all theories. It's like a theory of everything. Yeah. So it really can be used for anything, which is why it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I had been, this personal story. So I've been struggling with my weight since my early 20s, right? So I'm 37 now. So probably since I was about 21, 22, I would say. So when I started getting, I was in this car accident when I was 22. It was pretty bad. And after that, I gained a bunch of weight. And I've never really been able to lose it. I would lose 5-10 pounds here or there, but nothing really significant. One time I lost weight by hardcore working out, like 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. And doing a modified, somewhat healthy diet. But I wasn't able, it was unsustainable, you know, and I gained the weight back and actually gained more weight. So I was really frustrated. So one night, it was about New Year's Eve. It was New Year's Eve. I was having like a lot of extreme back pain and I couldn't even stand up. And I was kind of seeing the road to being on like maybe prescription painkillers in my future, because I was really having a hard time dealing with all my pain issues, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's a side thing from just the physical appearance and self-confidence from being overweight and those types of things. Right. So it all goes hand in hand. So then, I have a friend who is really familiar with this particular diet that's pretty popular now. And it's not really a diet, it's just kind of a lifestyle. So I asked him for some knowledge. So the first thing I did was I gained that knowledge, like that top left quadrant. I try to get my willpower up, right? My self-confidence that I can do this thing.
Great.
And then I got the knowledge from him and enough to get started, right? But then I was applying integral theory to this solution because I realized that knowledge and willpower, it doesn't, and I've seen it in the past, that hasn't led to sustainable success, you know. So then I thought, well, okay, so the bottom left quadrant was my fiance. We're getting married soon, we live together, and she doesn't know anything about this way of eating and things like that. So I explained it to her as best I could, the little I knew at the time. And what I needed to get was really the culture of our relationship to be able to support this lifestyle change that I was trying to make. Because if she cooks, I can't eat what she's eating, maybe, right?
Yeah.
It depends on the day. But so that was a big hurdle for me, actually, because I was kind of asking her to cook two meals every time, you know, or one and a half, you know, a modified meal for me or something, you know?
Yeah.
So, So I she was on board. I got the buy-in there. Top right quadrant was like, okay, what should I be measuring? And so is it just weight? Is it other things, right? So so I use this app and I track my macros, and that lives there. Body fat percentage lives there, BMI, these types of things. And even things like waist to height ratio, which is a pretty big thing now. So I started tracking, you know, like what I was eating, the macros I was eating, and trying to achieve this, what this kind of lifestyle change would be. And then the bottom right corner, which was the last thing, was since I'm traveling 4 days a week, I can't cook my own food. I'm not staying in a place that I can. Even if I was, I probably at that time wouldn't do it because I just wasn't cooking for myself at the time. Yeah. It's funny as now I like cook all the time. So it's a funny change. So I sat down with my friend and we went over all the restaurants in the area where I work. And we came up with a plan about what I could eat at each restaurant. And that was enough to get me started. So once I had all four quadrants addressed, I kicked it off. And it's like literally in the last 6.5 months, it totally changed my whole life. Like my health is insanely improved. I've lost almost 70 pounds, 18% body fat, and with pretty much minimal working out compared to what I used to do. I was trying to lose weight before. So, like I said, integral theory for me was a big part of my lifestyle change and success. And not only that, but I just got my blood work back, and doctor told me I'm healthiest that I've ever been, like since he's seen me.
Congratulations, yeah. Troy. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, and I'm 37, so I'm healthier now than I was in my 20s, apparently, according to my blood work. So I will say this is applying integral theory to a personal problem, but you can see how any problem you have, applying this theory can be very beneficial. So I'm done talking about my diet. But
no, that was a great example, Troy. And it is. You did something in each of the quadrants. You even put in a structure in place. Even though you found restaurants to go to, you figured out how to look for restaurants, because when you move and go work in a new city or town, you've got to go find new places to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And that's the thing with the integral theory. You can put, we talk about, you put anything in the middle. It's like you put a topic there, be it the enterprise, be it teams. I've seen people use conflict on teams. You can put that in the middle and you look at it from all four of the quadrants. Like you were doing with your diet. When you go to the website called Integral Life, we'll put the link there, you'll see there's areas where people are specialized in this. There's like integral coaching, integral medicine, integral meditation. They use this in various areas in life. For me, I'm currently learning, practicing it, and using it for Agile at team and enterprise level. That's kind of where I find the most use of it. I don't go in and try and tell everybody about it or what it is. It's just I practice it, I apply it. So when I'm going to advise people on what would be our next moves, or what are we going to structure and put in place to resolve things, or what we see is going wrong, look at it from all four of the quadrants, and that's where my thing will come, where I go, we've got three or four things to do. And people are always amazed because they go, well, we normally just fix one or two things. And that's when I go, well, it's going to take more than one or two things probably to resolve that. And have we looked at this angle and that angle?
Right. Yeah, totally. It makes sense to me. So is there anything else about integral theory you wanted to touch on, William?
You've probably tapped all my knowledge on it now. I am specialized in one area of it. I still got way more to learn about it. This is one thing where I'll say, do read one of the books is called A Brief History of Everything. And after that, go look a little bit. They are what they call the AQOL model is what the short name for it is. and then go and practice it. Try it out. See how it works for you. Because the only way, it's like agile, you get better at doing it and you uncover better ways to apply it. And that would be my advice for people. Just learn enough. You don't have to be an expert in it, but learn enough to be able to look at the different quadrants, a couple of the levels, probably some lines you want to concentrate on, and then see how it improves what you're doing in your agile work.
And even using it, I've used it since I learned about it. I used it as a retro technique. I've taught it to some Scrum Masters. And I sat in on a retro where it was used for the first time, and the team absolutely loved it. Like, it actually brought out so many topics that they normally would never talk about. And that all four quadrants were filled with sticky notes. So how I came up with a retro for it is basically I ask one team member to come up with at least one thing in each quadrant. So, so you're looking for like, the I quadrant would be, okay, so a retro on myself, right? Like what did I do well this sprint, or what could I have done better, or things like that, right?
Yes.
And or what could I be learning to help the team myself and things like that, that could live in that quadrant. Then the bottom left quadrant would be things like, you know, team dynamics, team culture, that kind of stuff. So everyone has to write at least one card for each quadrant, you know, positive, negative, whatever, right? Sure. And that got a lot of results from that team. So that, like I said, you could use this for anything. So I even put the instructions for this on our coalition site that I came up with. So I'll link that in the description as well.
Oh, super. Yeah, that will be very helpful.
Yeah.
Really cool. I like the inventiveness there, Troy.
Well, thank you. All right, William. Well, I wanted to thank you for your time once again. You know, I've been using this for a while, and even just listening to you talk, you spurred some things up where I actually took a few notes when you were talking live. So I may actually go back and listen to this again, because I think there was a few things there I can even learn from this, even having worked with you for, like, I don't know, six to eight months or so.
Yep.
It's funny in how one conversation, it's like you could still pick up things which you may have missed in the past. So, So thanks again. So if people want to find out more about you, William, they want to get in touch with you. Do you have anything you want to promote? Now would be the time.
Thank you, Troy. Yeah, I've got a Twitter handle at WLStrydom, spelled Strydom. And also just Google William Strydom Agile, and I should come up my LinkedIn. Please feel free to send me a note. Just let me know where you found me. If you say, hey, I listened to your podcast, I wanted to love to link up with you, and let's make that happen. I hope everybody finds this helpful, and you know, stay agile and bring in the integral lens into your work.
All right. Well, thank you so much, William.
Thank you, Troy.